What I am about to share with you predates anything in the Bible, any of the Sumerian, Babylonian, cuneiform tablets, Greek, Egyptian, Roman mythos, even the Vedic stuff. These translations come from a book called the Book of Zion, which is supposed to be information directly from light beings, ethereal beings that were here before our physical bodies. And it describes a multitude of races, 7 to be exact, different timelines. I'm going to give you a quick rundown, actually. Walk-ins, ethereal bodies, androgynous beings, dragons, monsters, giants, the Nephilim are described in here, the Anunnaki, Atlantis, Lemuria, angels, demons, literally forbidden history that they won't teach you about in school and many universities, most universities, because this information, unless you go to a theosophical university, this information is so controversial because it literally goes back billions of years. I mean, this predates the Anunnaki by billions of years. This predates the planets. This describes, in my opinion, the chakra system and the insertion of chakras and what it was like before chakras. Very powerful information. And it also describes, I think, the Bhava Chakra, the Hindu will of destinies and fortunes and fates and realms, etc. Want to give a huge shout out to Trade Genius Academy. Make sure to support our sponsors. If you've seen these cryptocurrencies, the rise and falls, the ups and downs, the roller coaster ride, many of these cryptocurrencies, I know people that have done very well, and I know people that have bought when they shouldn't have. So if you're interested in getting into possibly trading, if you're interested in investing in cryptocurrencies, if you want to learn about the ones that are up and coming that you can get into for really cheap, if you want to do it yourself or if you want to actually talk to somebody like an expert, check out Trade Genius Academy. Click the link, support our sponsors, and hopefully you'll do very well. So Bob's a regular on the show. He is an expert. I mean, he's been following Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, these different cryptocurrencies since inception. So definitely keep an eye on Trade Genius Academy. Support our sponsors and do well. All right, now let's go back to The Secret Doctrine, The Synthesis of Science, Religion, and Philosophy by Helena Blavatsky. This is Volume 2, Anthropogenesis. This came out in 1893. And you can see here the different stanzas. There's 12 of them talking about the beginnings of sentient life, how nature was unaided and how it failed. Then there are attempts to create man, the creation of the first races, the evolution of the second race. Then it has the evolution of the sweatborn, the semi-divine down to the first human races and physical bodies. And the Gnostic stuff, if I read through a lot of the Gnostic texts, the Nag Hammadi, a lot of that information describes some of this as well, but it doesn't go back as far, and it doesn't get into as much detail, in my opinion, at least from what we've been shown. And it doesn't... Well, I'll just share it with you here in a minute. So the history of the fourth race, the final evolution of man, the civilization and destruction of the fourth and fifth races, the fifth race and its divine instructors. So that's just a quick rundown. Now, if you read here, preliminary notes on the archaic stanzas and the four prehistoric continents, the stanzas with the commentaries thereon in this volume are drawn from the same archaic records as the stanzas from Volume 1, Cosmogony. As far as possible, a verbatim translation is given, but some of the stanzas are too obscure to be understood without explanation, and therefore, as in Volume 1, they are first given in full as they stand. And then, when taken verse by verse with their commentaries, an attempt is made to make them clearer by words added in footnotes in anticipation of the fuller explanation of the commentary. As regards to the evolution of mankind, the secret doctrine postulates 3 new propositions, which stand in direct antagonism to modern science, as well as current religious dogmas. It teaches the simultaneous evolution of 7 human groups on 7 different portions of our globe. the birth of the astral before the physical body, the former being a model for the latter, and that man in this round preceded every mammalian, the anthropoids, insects included in the animal kingdom. Anthropoids. Not anthropods, anthropoids. Nanny, nanny. Similar to androids, but anthropoids. Okay, not funny. But how cool is that? All right, so let's go to stanza one. Let's go to stanza one. I know your time is very valuable. Here we go. Stanza one. The law which turns the fourth is servant to the laws of the seven. They who revolve, driving their chariots around their Lord, the one eye of our world. His breath gave life to the seven. It gave life to the first. Now, I think that's referring to the seven luminary bodies that overlook the 7 days of the week. It could also be connected to the seven chakras. Then it says, and I think it's describing the sun, the one eye of our world. Is that the sun, or is that the divine that lights everything up? It gave life to the first. Said the earth, Lord of the shining face, my house is empty. Send thy sons to people this will. Thou hast sent thy seven sons to the Lord of wisdom. Seven times doth see thee near to himself. Seven times more doth he fill thee. Thou hast forbidden thy servants, the small rings, to catch thy light and heat, thy great bounty to intercept on its passage. Send now to thy servants the same. It's saying bring beings into these forms. You've got these planets now. Now it's saying bring beings into it. And it also is making me think of the will of destinies, the will of life, the will of fortune, the Bhava Chakra. Said the Lord of the Shining Face, I shall send thee a fire when thy work is commenced. Raise thy voice to other lokas. Apply to thy father, the Lord of the Lotus, for his sons, thy people, shall be under the rule of the fathers. The men shall be mortals, the men of the Lord of Wisdom, not the sons of Soma, are immortal. Cease thy complaints. Thy seven skins are yet on thee. Thou art not ready. Thy men are not ready. So the seven skins, that might be referring to the seven chakras. After great throes, she cast off her old three and put on her new seven skins and stood in her first one. Is that a ethereal body with seven chakras? Or is that the planet and then seven new planetary bodies and also the moon and the sun? Or is it both, as above, so below, the microcosm, the macrocosm? Stanza two. Hold on a second, I gotta drink some coffee here. Love this stuff. Oh, I love coffee. Coffee's so good. The will world for 30 crores. Crores more, which is like three, that's actually 4.2 billion years, I think. Hold on a second, I did the math on this the other day. A crore, how much is a crore? How long is a crore? 10 million, okay, so 10 million years. So 300, so that's a total of 300 million years. The will world for 300 million years, it constructed rupas, which are beings, soft stones that harden, hard plants that soften, talking about the vegetation and the elemental kingdoms, visible from invisible, insects and small lives. She shook them off her back whenever they overran the mother. Makes me think of Gaia, you know, the being, the planet, Earth. And then people say, well, oftentimes people are like ticks, and one of these days they're just going to be thrown off. They're going to be shook off like ticks. Then after another 300 million years, she turned round. She lay on her back, on her side. She would call no sons of heaven. She would ask no sons of wisdom. She created from her own bosom. She evolved watermen, terrible and bad. Now, this is what I'm thinking. The planet's created. Then the planet starts moving. The planet starts its orbit. And then in doing so, Enki, watermen, Enki is described in ancient stories coming out of the water, being half, you know, being a merman, half fish, half man. Even the ancient Greek mythos describes somebody coming out of the waters in a fish-like body, then helping people learn how to write and science and knowledge, etc. And I don't think Enki's bad like some people do. I know that Robert Stanley comes on the show, and he's got an interpretation of, and he could be right. Hey, I don't know. I mean, he very well could be. I just don't know. I'm still agnostic. I mean, there's times that I think Enki could be the good guy, and there's times I think Enki could be kind of a trickster. You know, there's times I think that maybe Enki could be doing his own thing, and he doesn't really have our best interest at heart. And then I think there's times that he does have our best interest at heart. And I think there are people that have personal relationships with Enki, but I don't know. So that's just my opinion, and you guys know what they say about opinions. If you've actually met Enki, if Robert actually met him, and if he gets bad vibes, if something doesn't resonate, hey, man, I get it. I mean, I've seen some freaky things before, too. Like, I've told you guys, I think I saw that giant demon or that being that's depicted on the Bava Chakra, the giant demon that's literally feeding off of the wills of destinies and the wills of karma and fortune and everything inside of it. So, like, this giant cosmic being that has captured spirits and captured souls and is just feeding off of them and using them as entertainment. But, you know, I mean, that could have just been swamp gas from Uranus. I don't know. But what's interesting is, and maybe at one point, Enki, you know, was looked at us with distaste and certain people with distaste, but not everybody. You know what I mean? Do you like everybody you meet? So I just don't know if there's, because when you read through these old tablets, Enki's actually the good guy. Like when you read through the ancient Sumerian tablets, he's the one that people go to when Enlil won't help, when others won't help. They go to Enki. Enki's the one that offers compassion, etc. And when you read through some of the stuff in the, when you read the Bible, the Holy Bible, and you realize a lot of it is connected with the Vatican and the church, and you find out the people that were involved in orchestrating that specific set of books and scriptures and the way that it was done, there's a lot of very powerful information and knowledge there. There's a lot of hidden knowledge there as well. You just have to be careful how you interpret it and how you use it, in my opinion, because there's so many layers there that, especially when it describes the God as monotheistic in the Bible, the way that it describes the God and the times and the years and everything's linked, I feel that there was a certain agenda to take all the credit and link it to one deity when there are a multitude of deities out there underneath the divine, underneath the one, and they're, you know, misinterpreting that. Now, that's what I have gathered. That's the information that I feel, and that's what I resonate with. But I think that Enki has been portrayed as the bad guy oftentimes when he may not be the bad guy. So I'm still researching this, folks. I mean, people like Gerald Clark really believe that Enki's the good guy. There's a lot of people that really feel Enki's the good guy. Maybe Enki feels that he's so far and above what modern humanity is as far as an intelligence level and spiritual level and evolutionary level, that he would look at most humans as many humans would look at cattle in their farm, on their ranch, that they're eventually going to eat. But maybe there's a couple out there, you know, a couple cows that are just that much cooler that they just can't do it to because they've made a bond or a connection with it. They can't slaughter them. They've, you know, they're just going to pet them and feed them and let them do their thing free range. I don't know. What do you think? Stanza 2. The watermen, terrible and bad, she herself created from the remains of others, from the dross and slime of her first, second, and third, she formed them. The Dahani came and looked, the Dahani from the bright father, mother, from the white regions they came, from the abodes of the immortal mortals. So these beings come from immortality. Now you've got the duality. Now you've got the father, mother, not just an androgynous being. You've got the duality. Displeased they were, our flesh is not there. No fit rupas for our brothers of the fifth. No dwellings for the lives. Pure waters, not turbid, they must drink. Let us dry them. The flames came, the fires with the sparks, the night fires and the day fires. They dried out the turbid dark waters. With their heat, they quenched them. The Lahas of the High The Lamayan of below came. They slew the forms which were two and four-faced. They fought the goat men and the dog-headed men and the men with fishes' bodies. How many Sumerian tablets have you seen with depictions of goat men? And then the Vedic stuff that shows... The Vedic stuff that shows two heads, four heads, etc. The dog men. Men with fishes' bodies. I mean, there's all sorts of evidence for that throughout cultures. The Greek, the Roman, the Egyptian. Sumerian. Mother water, the great sea wept. She arose. She disappeared in the moon, which had lifted her, which had given her birth. When they were destroyed, Mother Earth remained bare. She asked to be dried. Sounds like a pretty gnarly catastrophe there when it sounds like the water leaves to the moon. That's interesting. When they were destroyed, Mother Earth remained bare. She asked to be dried. So all these beings are destroyed. There's a great catastrophe on the planet. Could that be describing Tiamat? Or could that be describing the planet? Was our planet at one time larger? Something caused, something hit it. Now I'm starting to think that maybe the moon is part of the Earth. Something caused the moon to split from the Earth. The water went with the moon. So the moon is now like a planet. The moon has water. The moon has luscious life. Let's get this, because we're going to talk about the moon people here in a minute. Stanza 3. Now remember, this is billions and billions and billions of years ago. Stanza 3. The Lord of the Lords came from her body. He separated the waters, and that was heaven above, the first heaven. The great Chohas called the lords of the moon, of the airy bodies, bring forth men, men of your nature, give them their forms within. She will build coverings without. Males, females will they be, lords of the flame also. They went each on his allotted land, seven of them, each on his lot. The lords of the flame remained behind. They would not go. They would not create. So the lords of the moon bring forth men. This is describing people of the moon. Now people are formed on the moon. Seven different beings are formed on the moon. And then they're brought back down to the earth as there's this separation going on. Now when it says the firmament, I don't think it's referring to a dome that you hit and you go... like the Stephen King novels. I think it's describing science in a metaphorical fashion, and it's describing these beings that are now coming from the moon, and there's seven of them, the seven beings, and they're being scattered throughout the planet now after the planet has rebuilt itself. Stanza four. The seven hosts, the will-born lords, propelled by the spirit of life-giving, separate man from themselves, each on his own zone. Seven times seven shadows of future men were born, each of his own color and kind, each inferior to his father. The fathers, the boneless, could give no life to beings with bones. Their progeny was Bahuta, with neither form nor mind. Therefore, they are called the Chahaya race. So that's described, that devolution right there. Devolution, the boneless ones, the formless ones, and these are the ancients that go back billions and billions of years, at least. I mean, they could be timeless. The boneless ones, they're superior to those with bones, but they can't give birth to them. They're called the Chahaya race. Their progeny was Bahuta, and that makes me think of Buddha, and how he wants to get to the point of almost nothingness, where you're not bound to any karma, so you can get out of the will of destinies, etc. That's now I'm starting to understand more of the Buddha mindset. I'm picking up on that. How are the Manusha born? Manushaya born. How are they born? The Munas, or Manus, with minds, How are they made? The Father's call to their help, their own fire, which is the fire that burns in earth. The spirit of the earth called to his help, the solar fire. Gaia is communicating with the sun, but also they're working in conjunction together to form these new beings. These three produced in their joint efforts a good rupa. The triad are creating human beings. This is depicted throughout history, throughout the scriptures, throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. These beings are created, a good rupa, a good being, a good form is created. It could stand, walk, run, recline, or fly. Yet it was still but a chahaya, a shadow with no sense. So it's a replica, but with no sense. Does that mean it doesn't have a soul? Does that mean it doesn't have the spark? It could fly too. That's pretty cool. I mean, imagine that. It can walk, run, recline, fly. The breath needed a form. The fathers gave it. The breath needed a gross body. The earth molded it. The breath needed the spirit of life. The solar lahas breathed it into its form. The breath needed a mirror of its body. We gave it our own, said the Dionys. The breath needed a vehicle of desires. It has it, said the drainer of waters. But breath needed a mind to embrace the universe. It needs a mind to embrace the universe. We cannot give that, said the fathers. I never had it, said the spirit of the earth. The form would be consumed were I to give it mine, said the great fire. Man remained an empty, senseless bahuta. Thus have the boneless given life to those who became men with bones in the third. So this is described also, folks, in the Gnostic text of the Nag Hammadi Treatise, the secret book of John, totally describes how the archons, Yah the Baoth, blows life into Adam, blew the spark of his mother, Sophia, and then bang, they tried to make him alive. They couldn't do it for a long time. He was there, the body was there, but they couldn't. Then they breathed life into him. And then Yah the Baoth's like, uh-oh, I didn't realize this, but I just gave him my powers. And then they tried to suppress Adam and get it back and imprison him. And then, I mean, so this is describing the exact same thing in the Gnostic text in the Secret Book of John. This came out 130 years ago before the Nag Hammadi Treaties were even discovered. So there you go, people that are saying Blavatsky is a charlatan. Somebody left a comment saying, oh, she wrote a letter to a friend saying it was all made up. I said, show me the letter. Show me the handwriting analysis. Let me see that too. Didn't hear anything back. Oh, she's a Satanist. She was Crowley's friend. Her and Crowley were friends. They worshipped each other. Stuff like that. Really? Show me. So anyway, read her book. I think if you read somebody's work, oftentimes people, you can get a really good idea of how somebody thinks, or at least what they're thinking when they write it. You can get in the mind of somebody, study neurolinguistic programming, and if you mimic people's personality and actions and body language, etc., you can kind of get in their mind that way too. By modeling people and modeling their actions, etc. So reading somebody's book is literally getting into their mind. Now, when she describes, this is just the translation of the stanzas. This is just the knowledge presented that could be from divine, you guys. I mean, this could be from the divine, literally knowledge that predates anything that has been written by human hands. She's just taking what's already there and translating it. And even the name of the Book of Zion, is quite fascinating. Have you ever been to Zion National Park in Utah? It's beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. Like, you can only drive there in January and February because so many people want to go there. It is just so gorgeous, such a gem. It literally earned its name, I feel, because it is just beautiful. Even the Matrix movie, the one organic place left is called Zion. Stanza 5. The first were the sons of Yoga, their sons the children of the Yellow Father and the White Mother. The second race was the product of building and expansion, the asexual from the sexless. Thus was O Lanu, the second race produced. Their fathers were the self-born, the Chahaya, from the brilliant bodies of the lords, the fathers, the sons of twilight, from the luminaries created them. their fathers were self-born, but these ones are not. This form of humanity is actually starting now to be in a physical body. When the race becomes old, the old waters mixed with the fresher waters. When it drops, became turbid, they vanished and disappeared in the new stream, in the hot stream of life. The outer of the first became the inner of the second. The old wing became the new shadow and the shadow of the wing. I'm going to have to ponder on that for a bit. Stanza 6. Then the second evolved, the eggborn. The third, the sweat grew, its drops grew, and the drops became hard and round. The sun warmed it. The moon cooled and shaped it. The wind fed it until its ripeness, the white swan from the starry vault. That's stanza 6. So this is, I would say, the earlier forms of humanity, when like kind of like the Adam and Eve. Now you've got Adam and Eve here because you've got eggborn. So the white swan from the starry vault overshadowed the big drop, the egg of the future race, the man swan of the later third. First male, female, then man and woman. The self-born were the chahayas, the shadows from the bodies of the sons of twilight. Neither water nor fire could destroy them. Their sons were. So this is describing the spirit. This is describing how the shadows from the bodies of the sons of the twilight, I'm thinking of almost like this holographic quantum physics entanglement, all connected. Your spirit is connected to your body. You know, people say they're two separate things. They're not. It's a part of the same thing. This is just a lower vibrational form experiencing in different sensory perceptions. You've got, you have a limited amount of senses, which in turn gives you more because it's less, if that makes sense. And then when you go back to having all your senses and any senses that you didn't even know you had, then you're experiencing things differently. So even though you have more at that point, it's not the same experience. So this is an experience, this body, this form, this reality of duality that we're in is an experience. It's an experience of awesomeness for some and difficulties for others. And, you know, a lot of people love it here. A lot of people don't love it here. So which side of the spectrum are you on? It's very interesting. So stanza 7. The sons of wisdom, the sons of night, ready for rebirth, came down. They saw the vile forms of the first third. We can choose, said the lords. We have wisdom. Some entered the chahayas. Some projected a spark. Some deferred till the fourth from their own rupa. They filled the kama. Those who entered became arats. Those who received but a spark remained destitute of knowledge. The spark burned low. The third remained mindless. Their jivas were not ready. These were set apart among the seven. They became narrow-headed. The third were ready. In these shall we dwell, said the lords of the flame and of the dark wisdom. Now this is talking about walk-ins, folks. This is talking about, in my interpretation, it's talking about these bodies that were created, and they're literally directing their consciousness into these bodies. Okay, there's the DNA. We can take over that. This is literally describing different beings that are on our planet right now, or on the planet at that point, I should say. Maybe they're still here, and they very well could be, and it's describing these. And then think about the natives that did the mimicking of their god. Sometimes they would see how long they could get their necks. Remember that? They would do just weird, bizarre things to their bodies to mimic what they would probably see as gods or deities, etc. Different forms that had, different beings that walked the earth that had very powerful technologies and capabilities with their mind and their body, etc. But they also had physical limitations. And I think that they might be describing them right here. That's interesting. So their jivas were not ready. Those were set apart among the seven. They became narrow-headed. And I'm thinking of people, you know, the elongated skulls. The third were ready. In these shall we dwell, said the lords of the flame and the dark wisdom. The dark wisdom, is that referring to the dark lords in the tablets of Thoth, describing the serpent beings that lurked in the shadows and were have been around before Atlantis, that did work and offered services for people in power, where they it was almost like selling their soul, but they were working together, they were merging together, and then they worked through blood, through rituals, through power, through pain, through suffering, etc. It's interesting. Is that, or is the dark wisdom something else? In these shall we dwell, said the lords of the flame and of the dark wisdom. So is that, are there two, once again, the polarity of the lords there? You've got the flame, which would be considered a higher vibrational realm, the light, and then the dark wisdom, which would be considered the archons or the serpent beings described in the tablets of Thoth that work through blood rituals, etc., and through the masses, pain and suffering, but they pick people in high places of power. How did the Manasseh, the sons of wisdom, act? They rejected the self-born. They are not ready. They spurned the sweat-born. They are not quite ready. They would not enter the first egg-born. So they weren't able to get into certain beings. When the sweat-born produced the egg-born, the twofold, the mighty, the powerful with bones, the lords of wisdom said, now shall we create. So now you've got recreation going on. They're not having issues with babies being born. All right, here you go. The third race became the Vahan of the lords of wisdom. It created sons of will and yoga by Kriyashakti. Kriyashakti, it created them, the holy fathers, ancestors of the Urats. Excuse me, stanza 8. From the drops of sweat, from the residue of the substance, matter, from dead bodies of men and animals, of the will before, the will of destinies, the will of karmas, the bhava kakra, and from cast off dust, the first animals were produced. Animals with bones, dragons of the deep, and flying sarpas were added to the creeping things. They that creep on the ground got wings. They of the long necks in the water became the progenitors of the fowls of the air. Wait a second. The long necks in the water, now I'm thinking of these giant dinosaurs, these giant serpent, you know, whale dinosaurs that they've got bones, plenty of fossilized evidence for that. During the third, the boneless animals grew and changed. They became animals with bones. Their chahayas became solid. The animals separated the first. They began to breed. The twofold man separated also. He said, let us as they, let us unite and make creatures. They did. So this is saying that animals have souls too, folks, in my opinion. This is saying absolutely that animals have souls. He said, let us as they, let us unite and make creatures. So then you've got animals breeding with these, with the humans of that time. Ew. And those which had no spark took huge she animals unto them. They begat upon them dumb races. Dumb they were themselves, but their tongues united. The tongues of their progeny remained still. Monsters they bred, a race of crooked, red-haired, covered monsters going on all fours, a dumb race to keep the shame untold. So this is describing those monsters and all those. How many ancient relics are there and sculptures and petroglyphs and hieroglyphics and scriptures and information that describe and show these giants? Oftentimes you'll see these giants on Hindu temples that are larger than Buddha and humans by a multitude of sizes. I mean, like the size of a building compared to a human being is the size of some of these giants and these monsters, etc. So I think that's what it's describing there, these gene twisting manipulation, etc. And you know, that's my take on that right there. Stanza 9. Seeing which the laws who had not built men wept, saying, the Amanasah have defiled our future abodes. This is karma. Let us dwell in the others. Let us teach them better, lest worse should happen. They did. Then all men became endowed with manas. They saw the sin of the mindless. The fourth race developed speech. The one became two also, all the living and creeping things that were still one, giant fish, birds, and serpents with shell heads. So this, you know, another catastrophe, another Armageddon, another reset event, and now you've got these, you know, the luminaries, the beings and the spirit beings are saying, look at what they're doing to these bodies. I mean, look at this. This is our future reincarnation bodies. This is where we're going to be going here in X amount of years. Is this what we want? No. Let's reset it. Let's redo it. And start over. So bingo, they start over. Now you've got the next level here, the fourth race. And then this is when people start to talk. They're not being telepathic anymore. They're communicating with words. stands at 10. Thus, 2x2 on the 7 zones, the third race gave birth to the fourth. The Sura became Asura. The first on every zone was moon-colored, the second yellow, like gold, the third red, the fourth brown, which became black with sin. The first 7 human shoots were all of one complexion. The next 7 began mixing. Then the third and fourth became tall with pride. We are the kings. We are the gods. That's, in my opinion, describing the Anunnaki right there. Or maybe it's describing the Nephilim. Or maybe they're the same. Or maybe it was a race of people from the Anunnaki or the Nephilim that were saying that. But the first on every zone was moon-colored. This is describing the different colored skins of the beings, of the humans on the planet. See, and then listen to this. So then the third and fourth became tall with pride. We are the kings. We are the gods. Then, on 41, it says, they took wives fair to look upon, wives from the mindless, the narrow-headed. They bred monsters, wicked demons, male and female, also Kado, with little minds. They built temples for the human body, male and female they worshipped. Then the third eye acted no longer. So their third eye is not activated anymore. They're becoming consumed within themselves, within these physical treats, these empires of dirt stuff. Oh, look at my empire of dirt. It's bigger than your empire of dirt. Oh, look at my pyramid. It's bigger than your pyramid. Oh, I have more gold than you do. Oh, look at my lawn around my pyramid. It's better than your lawn around your pyramid. I mean, seriously, that's insane. They're not using their third eye. They're not connected to source anymore. They're being consumed in these physical bodies. They're being consumed with themselves, and they're not evolving anymore. They're devolving in this lower vibrational form. And they're becoming further and going further and further away from self, from higher consciousness, from the divine, from the spark, from the true essence of creation itself. Hopefully you'll always be connected, but these guys are going so far down on the spectrum that the physical vibrations, they're losing a huge form of self by getting engulfed in a part of themselves, the physical form. So that's fascinating. This is incredible. I mean, I've read this a few times already, but every time I read it, just something else resonates with me. It's like, boom, boom, boom. Hello, hello, hello. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. Kind of like that. All right. It was all good until I started doing that. Now I can't wait to read the comments. Stanza 11. They built huge cities of rare earths and metals. They built out of the fires vomited out of the white stone of the mountains and of the black stone. They cut their own images in the size and likeness, and in their size and likeness, and worshiped them. Think about Machu Picchu, some of these ancient temples, Pumapunka, that are huge. That's what this is describing right here. They built great images, 9 yadas high, the size of their bodies. Inner fires had destroyed the land of their fathers. The water threatened the fourth. Now it's talking about the great flood that takes these guys over. Boom! There's a lot of info, you guys. The first great waters came. They swallowed the 7 great islands. All holy saved, the unholy destroyed. With them, most of the huge animals produced from the sweat of the earth. Dinosaurs extinct. This is, okay, so there were 7 islands. And each of these 7 islands had a different race of beings that were formed of a certain, of certain DNA. And you can still see it today when you look at the differences of people physiologically. And, and it's fascinating. We should embrace our differences. We should embrace our individuality and also embrace others. I think that if we do that, and if we're excellent to each other, like Bill and Ted say, be excellent to each other, what else do you need to do? If everybody was excellent to each other, and like cared about, okay, well, I get it. If I'm going to do this, it's going to upset Bob and Mary because, if I build this house too much taller, then they're not going to have that view of the beach. Maybe I can build it at this level so I can have a view of the beach and they can have a view of the beach. That's a terrible analogy, but you get my point. Don't tread on me. I won't tread on you. If you can't consume to the point of,
well, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm cutting down all these trees and I'm going to just, you know, make up this really cool house. You're like cutting down entire forests, like which is being done right now. Entire forests are being destroyed. I mean, there has to be balance. And there's also got to be a way to create a system that doesn't have so many petty laws and rules and regulations and stuff that just doesn't really matter, that takes away from our opportunities and what we have the right to do. Yet there's somebody else out there that says we don't, and because they've got a specific title, then we give them authority, even though it doesn't make sense oftentimes, right? So anyway, I'm kind of digressing a little bit there, but very interesting, very interesting. So stanza 12. Stanza 12. Few remained, some yellow, some brown and black, and some red remained. The moon colored were gone forever. This is talking about the moon people. They're gone forever. The fifth produced from the holy stock remained. It was ruled over by the first divine kings, the serpents who redescended, who made peace with the fifth, who taught and instructed it. Now, these serpents aren't the bad ones. You know, I think that oftentimes that name is linked to things that are... There's good serpents and bad serpents, just like anything else. Just like anything else. And serpent is also a form of wisdom. It's a form of knowledge, you know, that interpretation. So be careful when you read some of these texts, and I need to remind myself of this as well, when serpent is described, is it referring to knowledge or is it referring to the dark lords, similar to the book of Thoth, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth that describe these? I think it was tablet number 6 or something. So, the fifth produced from the holy stock remained. It was ruled over by the first divine kings, the serpents who redescended, who made peace with the fifth, who taught and instructed it. Wow. Powerful right there, wasn't it? I mean, whew, look at that. There's a little nano drone flying by me. Hey, buddy. Tell him I said hello. All right. So, how is your mind resonating right now? What's the vibrational frequency at where you're at? Did that resonate with you? Did that jive with you? Do you think that the knowledge that was presented there is pretty spot on? And if so, what's next for us? How do we get to the point to be able to use our physical body and our spirit and our mind to its fullest potential, to where it's the next level? It's an evolution of spirit and self, not a devolution. Let's not devolve. Let's not devolve. Let's evolve. Let's evolve and revolve at the same time, because it's all cyclical. Wow, fascinating. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to this presentation. Make sure to pick up The Secret Doctrine and support the Theosophical Society. Nanny, nanny, nanny. Also, you can pick up, I'm sure you could pick it up at Barnes & Noble. Many of online bookstores have it. Probably find it on eBay. You can pick up a PDF version that came out in the late 1800s, so it's in the public domain. I think this information for me is timeless. This resonates with me at so many levels. I've been asking so many questions, searching for, you know, who made who came first, what was it like before the Anunnaki, what was it like before these tablets that we have access to, you know, like the Sumerian mythos, etc. And even the Sumerian tablets describe a lot of the creation mythos as well. Yet when I read through the Sumerian tablets, I haven't found much about some of these other beings, like the ethereal beings, etc. It's a lot more about them. It's a lot more about their gods and their forms. And I don't want to say narcissistic, but it seems to be revolved a lot. It's not really narcissistic. Some of them are. I mean, some of the tablets are definitely narcissistic, not all of them. You know, they're just boasting themselves and how amazing they are, etc. But I think that they're more earthly sometimes, describing things. Maybe not. I don't know. There's a lot of spiritual. They're very spiritual as well. I need to come up with a better term, because they're multiple, multi-layered. Wouldn't you agree? The Sumerian tablets, the Greek mythos, the Egyptian. Now, one thing about the Egyptian Book of the Dead and some of these hieroglyphics and the pyramids and the magic and the science and the formulas behind them, I think are still way above and beyond anything else that I have seen. I mean, I think that they take science and magic to a whole other level. And if we could recreate some of the stuff that we can research from the Book of the Dead and these hieroglyphics and the way that these pharaohs and aristocratic bloodlines, etc., the way these people would sit and position themselves while they were alive, if we could figure out, because there's a lot of stuff for passing to the next, you know, when you pass, where you're going next. But it'd be interesting to see how much we could use for now to tap into our higher selves and use this form of energy to improve our consciousness, to improve our spirituality, and what we know and what we have the right to know, I feel, is just going to continue to grow, especially the times that we live in, folks. So thank you once again for being here. Make sure to support our sponsors. VirtualShield.com is also offering a 50% off discount right now if you are interested in keeping your information safe when you surf the web. If you want to surf the web anonymously, a VPN is a virtual private network, and they're less than $5 a month. With this special, they'll even give you a 30-day free trial. I use it. It works. It's effective. It's awesome. So check them out, virtualshield.com/leakproject. And once again, if you're interested in getting into cryptocurrencies, check out tradegeniusacademy.com. That could be the wave of the future, ladies and gentlemen. Be excellent to each other. Why not? Everybody else is doing it. And be the change you want to see.